Well, good evening.
Good evening.
Feels a little funny to be right back here again. We sat such a long time on Saturday. It was a wonderful sit. So we've gotten to the five skandhas, as far as I can tell, in the Heart Sutra. Practicing deeply the prajna paramita, the paramita of wisdom, one of the six paramitas that sums up all six of them. Generosity and ethical standards and energy and meditation and wisdom, and one more that I can't remember.
Patience.
Jeffrey.
Patience.
Thank you very much. All different aspects of how to practice this, the kind of intention and attitude that we take. So practicing the prajna paramita means connecting with our, it's not our intelligence, it's not some kind of smartness or even wiseness in the way that we think of people getting wise. There's a kind of connection that we already have, but as we sit, become very aware of. We call it universal or absolute or some other kind of big word, or boundlessness or emptiness. As I always say, it's really impossible to find a word to describe an experience. It's a familiar experience, but our clumsy words can't touch it. They can point to it. So perceived, practicing prajna, perceived that this body, this mind, is just coming and going all the time. Constantly coming and going and coming and going. There isn't one fixed place for it to be. There isn't one fixed person for it to be. And we know that in our own experience. Sometimes we're very social and charming, and other times we're grumpy and sitting in a corner somewhere. Is that the same person? Somewhat, but somewhat not. We are constantly moving with all the energies of the world and the universe as they are moving through us. So that although we want to know how to control things and own things and be things, if we study deeply, as Avalokiteshvara was doing, we have to see that it's all pretty ephemeral. Nothing lasts. So the five skandhas are also called the aggregates, which means in geology, an aggregate is stones that have all been gathered together, often by, at a river, and glued together, so that you have some granite and some feldspar and some blah, 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 all mushed together in one sort of aggregate that is defined by the geologists as a heap of stuff. And they can tell where it comes from because they analyze these things. And so what we do and what this is pointing to is are doing the same kind of analysis of seeing how we're put together, how everything is put together. And first of all, we have to see that we're made of stuff. Everything is made of stuff. I had a friend who kept saying, "This is my hand. I know this is me. This is..." So, yes, this is me. This is my hand. This is the floor. This is the ceiling. This is the universe. But we're actually receiving this information. So although we think we're separate from everything, our reception of everything connects us with it irrevocably in every possible way. We can't possibly know and experience anything without being this body. And so the question arises, are we the stuff that we're experiencing, or is the experience us? We can experience it, understand it both ways, actually. So the second skanda is about the sensation that we, all the different sensations, the colors and the smells and all the input that comes to us. And using the input, we begin to put things together and figure them out and give them names and qualities, and we judge them. And by that time, we begin to have ideas about what to do, and we begin to enact our ideas based on this accumulation of stuff that's been going on, until finally we have vijnana, which is how we identify everything. The V means to cut, jnana means knowledge, and so then that's our consciousness. That's our life of consciousness. But it's not just one thing. It's the whole kit and caboodle that happens at once. We say five skandhas, but really it's just a whole sort of semi-chaotic, endlessly happening event that we call me. And you, and it, and us, and all of it. So in this process of studying the five skandhas, our action, as we begin to really look deeply using our wisdom, is to see where we could find ourselves. What is our intrinsic self, the indivisible self? And so that's what this is pointing to. This whole sutra is pointing to how do we find something that is solid and particular to us. And in the end, we have to see that what we call intrinsic selfness is bigger than we thought and doesn't have any edges. It's boundless. So as Fatsang says, nothing exists by itself, which is obvious, but it's not so obvious when we start thinking about ourselves and wanting to be a little bit more important than this kind of understanding points to. Fatsang said, although the absolute and provisional are both submerged, their two truths are permanently present. The truth of banging around in this solid amalgamation of stuff and being at the same time boundless. Both. Form is emptiness. Not form becomes emptiness, but form is emptiness. Emptiness is form. Although emptiness and existence are both denied, their one meaning shines forever. True emptiness has never not existed, but by means of existence, it is distinguished from emptiness. Illusory existence has been empty from time without beginning, but by means of emptiness, it is seen as existing. Because existence is an empty existence, it does not exist. And because emptiness is an existent emptiness, it's not empty. Emptiness which is not empty does not stop being empty. An existence which does not exist exists, but not forever. Which is to say, we can't really say. There's no inherent logic in human life. As I've been listening to the scientists talk and the Upaya Zen and the Brain site, they keep saying, well, of course we don't know. And then they say this bit and this bit and this bit that they know. And then they say, yes, but we don't know how to put it together. And the same thing is being expressed here. We try to understand what it is to be a human mind body. And we pick at it and define all the bits and pieces, cut with the V into very fancy Latin names for many, many, many things. And still we don't really know in the way that Prajna is knowing. That there's another side of knowledge that we call wisdom. So practicing deeply the Prajna Paramita, perceiving that all five skandhas are marked with emptiness, means that however many sharp edges we run into, that still there is something else going on continually, always and forever. We can call it life, but that's too little. when I was a little girl, the ladies in the church would talk about God. And I thought, that's too little. There's something bigger than that. So having said that about the five skandhas, then Avalokiteshvara continues by getting very particular by saying no eyes, no ears, no nose, no tongue, no body, no mind. So it's the whole kit and caboodle of this is marked with emptiness. In the older schools, they used to think that things were dharmas, small d dharma, and that things were almost all marked with emptiness, but some of them were special and more real. And so this is the first statement of the not real part. All dharmas are marked with emptiness. Even the ones that they thought were real aren't. And so I think of this from this point on as a blackboard with all the teachings and written up and a big eraser that's going until the blackboard is empty. Because even the most wise, brilliant, deep ideas and understandings that we have are still too small and not it. And so when we talk about being attached or clinging, that's what that means. Is just holding on to an idea as if it were reality, when it's just an idea that's not it. So I brought something that's a little different, but I thought it will either confuse you more or be helpful. So take a look and see what you think. Someone sent me this, knowing that this is what we were going to be talking about. Earth is supported by water, water by air, air is supported by space, but space is supported by neither air, water, nor earth. So these are the elements of which we are made. We're made of water, mostly water, quite a bit of air, and some minerals are thrown in there. In a similar way, the aggregates, the elements, and the senses are based upon karma and defilements. Karma and defilements meaning all the conditioning with which we came and which we have accumulated during our life as living beings. Karma is not some special spacey thing. It's this very particular accumulation of what we have become and with which we then affect what is becoming. So karma and the defilements are always based upon a mode of thought which is wrong. This improper mode of thought has its basis in the mind's purity, whereas the true nature of mind has no basis in any of the many phenomena. The aggregates, entrances, and elements should be known as being similar to earth. The karma and defilements of beings are to be known as similar to water. The improper mode of thought is similar to air, whereas the true nature is like the element of space. It has no base and no abiding. The improper mode of thought abides within the true nature of mind. This improper mode of thought gives rise to karma and the defilements. From karma and defilements, waters arise. The aggregates, entrances, and elements arising and disintegrating just as everything begins and has an end. The nature of mind is like the space element. It has neither causes nor conditions, nor these in any combination, nor any arising or destruction or abiding. This true nature of the mind clarity is like space, unchanging, not becoming defiled by desire and so on, passing impurities which from improper thinking spring. It is not produced by the waters of karma, defilements, and so forth, nor will it be burnt by the cruel fires of aging, sickness, and death. It's a different language. Improper modes of thought is a little more forgiving than bad thinking. it gives us a little space to. and it expresses our connection to all things. The all things that we forget we are, the all beings that we are, the elements and the way they flow as earth. And yet, the two truths are telling us that this spatial side of things, this boundless side of things, is the truth of the whole of it, beyond our thinking. So the basis of what keeps us bound and stuck, our stuck place, is really based on our desires, our grasping. And the freedom that's pointed to over and over in the Heart Sutra and in all of Buddha's teaching is to let go. Just let it go and be what it is. We all have a story, but the harder we work at recreating our story, the more we suffer. The more we let go our story and let it turn where it wants to turn and be what it wants to be, the more freedom we find. It's a freedom of not knowing. It's the kind of freedom that gives us not very much control over what's going to happen. But that's the truth of it. We have a little bit, but not as much as we think. So, are there questions?
Covered in some of the commentaries, but when, and I missed last week, so maybe you talked about that, when practicing deeply the Prajnaparamita perceived that all five skandhas are empty, that perception is not the kind of normal perception that we, with which we experience the five skandhas, I guess. Right, or our daily perceptions are not in the same league as that. Perception.
Apparently so. I think in the end it is the same, but we tend to try to recreate it into something else. So ultimately, there are just eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, mind.
So what his perception is really the same as ours.
It's just being absolutely present,
okay,
without holding anything. So it's the same.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I was thinking about what you mentioned about not having control, but it seems like we have to operate in the world, you have to act as if you have control. So
yes.
I wonder if you sort of act as if you have control and then step back and say, okay, I know I don't really have control, and sort of let it play itself out, or do you realize as you're doing it, well, I'm doing this thing and I really don't have control, but I'm acting as if I do because I have to make things happen in the world.
I think it's both, depending on what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
But our experience is, if we're paying attention, even on small things that we're doing, I always think, like cutting up a zucchini, that if we forget ourselves and just cut the zucchini, we can't say we're controlling the cutting anymore. It's just happening. The knife and the vegetable and our hand and the fire in our body are all in cooperation together to create this happening. So we really can't say there's no separation. And it helps to know that, so that we don't have to take the blame when we do sometimes, you know, oh, I did this really stupid thing, but did I do that? Or it happened. Causes and conditions all came together to bring this thing to. And there are often times when we have to be very sorry that it happened and apologize. You know, from very small things. I stepped on my cat's tail this morning. I was very sorry about that. To really big things that we need to be extremely sorry about. But our imperfections are what this is all about, not our longing to be perfectly perfect. It's how to live with this mysterious not one, not two. which lives us as we live. So it's a kind of dance.
There was a show on TV I was watching, I think, a couple of days ago about what makes somebody live so long. And they, I don't remember exactly what they called it, the blue something, different areas all over the world. Not having a lot to do with religion, but some kind of a way of living. And they interviewed some old guy that was 100 years old from a little island in Greece, was diagnosed with cancer and decided this is it, I'm going to give it up, I'm going to just go back to the island and live life, whatever, I'm going to live. He just started doing everything like he is normal, and make a long story short, well, he was, I think, diagnosed when he was 70 or 80, and here he is 104. And what was so encouraging to hear about the guy that did the interview was trying to summarize the whole thing. It's like, how does it work? And the thing that I took away from it was to keep things simple. Mm-hmm. That we live in such a complicated world. One, the daughter of one of the other mothers, she says, that also lived 100, she says, the interviewer, can you do what your mother is doing? She goes, no, she's living a simple life, playing with her grandkids, planting her plants, drinking a little wine, being happy, mm-hmm. and keeping it very simple.
Yes.
And it just seems, and one of the funny things, the guy said, and I forgot to die. Just enjoying, really truly enjoying the simple things.
Yes.
And, you know, when I was watching it, it's like, it's really the only way. There's so much going on, but it's so important to keep it simple.
There's a long article in Science News this last week or so about stress, mm-hmm. and all the ways that stress wear us out right away. So that the telomeres break off and all the things that keep us going start to disappear. The more stressed we are, the more we fall apart. So and the stress comes from wanting more, trying to do more, making more effort than we actually have the energy to do, trying to overcome, I think, a lot of things that don't need to be overcome, to just let things be kind of messy and not so perfect. And enjoy things more. I think our enjoyment of life is what keeps us alive. And stress is what kills us. They're finding out more and more.
I mean, he still had his stick and he was barely
sure.
walking, but he's just so happy taking each step with his stick and, you know.
Yep. Well, I can relate. I can relate.
Being present with every little thing, rather than 2,000 things at the same time.
Exactly.
Work.
Exactly. Yeah. But the world we live in is so complex that carving out a little place like that is, you really need a Grecian island somewhere to live on. It's so hard. Yeah. That's a wonderful example, Samia.
I mean, I don't know why I said that. It was just, it felt like good news to me.
It is good news. It's true wisdom. That's what all of this is pointing to, how to live, how to be this incredible being that we are. And it's so simple that a lot of people don't get it. It's too simple. But you're absolutely right. Simple is, that's it. Well, it's 8. There's lots more. Should do more red pine next week, but I enjoyed sharing this with you. So, announcements. Our announcer is off tonight. Does anybody know anything special?
Well, I'm going to be missing the group for about 7 weeks.
Oh, Jeffrey.
On Tuesday evenings, because of my commitment I made to the musical that I'm going to appear in. And so I'm really going to be... I'm keeping a journal of this and trying to apply it as I would in any situation. I'll be applying all the things that I take away from the Zendo. It'll be a very interesting experience, I'm sure, because I haven't worked with theatrical people in a long time. So.
What's the company?
It's San Jose Children's Musical Theater. It's their marquee production, which is the one in which all the graduates, as it were, the adults, come back and they perform in this. It's a moneymaker for the organization. They do it for free.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it's an opportunity to perform with my son. So I'll be able to hang out with him for 6 weeks. And because he is an actor and a director, I don't see him as frequently as I'd like, even though we only live about 3/4 mile from each other. But
I understand.
The schedule of a person who has that kind of life is,
yes,
doesn't, you don't always connect.
Yeah.
So we'll be connecting now. We're stage mates.
So can we come and watch?
Absolutely.
Oh, good.
Absolutely. Down at the Montgomery Theater, and I'll certainly email how it's they have a fabulous website, and mm-hmm. I don't know when they'll start selling tickets, but because it's about we open up on the 17th and go through the 24th of April. So, but because it's a really short rehearsal time period. We're rehearsing almost every day.
That is short. That's really
just,
for a musical.
So it's crazy.
What musical?
Oh, Ragtime. I'm familiar with it. So.
Cool.
And I think I like it because it's, I think, it's very engaging. It's very topical right now. I think the things that they talk about in Ragtime are things that we continue to talk about in our society, which is separation between the rich and the poor, and our treatment of people of different ilk.